Wow. Even I didn't know that I was profound sometimes. Thank you. The fact of the matter is there are people out there who are not scientists, who will never major in science, they'll never read a book on apologetics, but they're living their lives. They're raising their kids, they're working hard, whatever it is, and they are getting a steady narrative flow of things that aren't true, okay? Now, sometimes you see it in political news. We saw a classic example yesterday, okay? BuzzFeed, which is like one of the bottom feeders, okay? You know, once the internet was created, you have like every Joe Blow wearing his pajamas can blog and pretend to be, you know, Dan Rather. And the fact of the matter is that yesterday, BuzzFeed runs with a story and they say they have evidence of collusion and blah, 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 blah. So we're living in a time now where a complete lie, fabrication, which of course they earnestly believe because they want to believe it, is spread by the entire news universe. Now, if you have real journalistic standards, you don't do that. But we're living in a weird time. What I'm trying to say is this whole issue has gotten worse. And so your average person sucks this in all day long. And only if they're like a news junkie or they're paying attention do they see that, you know, Mueller says there's no truth to that. Please ignore that. After 24 hours of hearing this, okay? So people who aren't specialists don't have time to do the math, to do the science, to read every article on these kinds of things. And so they kind of take in what they can take in. And what people have been taking in roughly in the last 100 years are a number of false ideas, at the heart of which are some false scientific ideas, right? One of which is, we're just here, what's the big deal, right? Now, the fact of the matter is, as a scientist 100 years ago, you might well have said, what's the big deal? The universe has always been here, as far as we know. There's no evidence to the contrary. And this is just where we are. We don't really need to worry about it and the nonsense that the Bible says about, you know, us having been created at some point. You know, clearly science is pushing against that, whatever. This is the cultural drift over certainly all of our lifetimes, right? So when I was growing up, the information that I always took in, now it comes in subtle forms and in less subtle forms, okay? When you get to college, you know, you might get the professor that is kind of hitting you hard. He has an angry atheist bent and doesn't know that he's not supposed to be like a brain jackass in the classroom telling his opinions. He's supposed to actually be teaching. He didn't know that. And so he's kind of hitting young people hard. The young people have not been prepared typically by the culture or by their parents to refute this. So it's like Joe Blow expert sitting there behind the podium telling them about why they're insane to believe in God. It's the dumbest thing ever, right? And everybody nods and, you know, no, very few people would have the guts to say anything. And then it comes in subtler forms. You watch TV, okay? People like Neil deGrasse Tyson and Bill Nye and before them, Carl Sagan, were given a pulpit in the media to say absolutely, think of this, absolutely false things, not things with which we disagree. Who cares whether anyone agrees with something? The issue is it true? You have generations of people who had to listen to Carl Sagan opine about the universe is all there is and all there will ever be, blah, 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 right? And we are the stuff, we're made of the material that the stars are made of, you know, whatever. It's like, yeah, that's great, except you're wrong. And he died before I could tell him that to his face. But it strikes me that he probably knows this by now. So, can you imagine that you have generations of people, decades of people? This was, you know, in the 70s that Carl Sagan, you know, wearing the turtleneck, you know, was saying this kind of stuff, right? And I have to say, there was zero pushback in the mainstream media. Everybody just sucks it up. Like, that's it, you know? It's like flies to sugar water. There's nothing else. We're just gonna take that in, and he seems smart. He's wearing a turtleneck. So, you know, obviously, this is it. Oh, and he's at Cornell, and, you know, that's that. Except he's wrong. Can you imagine? He's wrong. Now, what's even funnier is that by the time he was talking about this stuff, he ought to have had a clue that he might be wrong. But what he was saying made perfect scientific sense in the 50s. But the way information travels, and this is really something I know about, I'm not a scientist, but I do know about how culture works. Something can be disproved, but you'll never hear about it, right? I mean, I think I said this yesterday, if a car has a fatal defect, because money is involved, you're going to hear about it real quick. If you own one of those models, they're going to be recalled because billions of dollars are on the line. There's a whole corporation on the line. They're going to contact you and say, don't drive your car. You could die. You need to know right now. It's dangerous. You need to know. Right? But if you're not forced to correct yourself by the market or by your stockholders, bad ideas, people just let it ride. What do I mean by that? Freud, okay, had decades to spew mostly nonsense, and the more time passes, the more serious psychiatrists understand that it was nonsense. He had decades to put it out there that the center of humanity is the sexual urge and blah, 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 all this stuff, right? Well, by the time the professionals realize Freud was blowing smoke, not just literally, nobody corrects it, right? There's no movement where everybody says, oh yeah, remember how we were inhaling that smoke for 30, 40, 50 years. We now have to exhale it. It's all wrong. Nobody does that. So the idea that sex is at the heart of everything, right, which is also a very materialistic idea, right, that it's just the species perpetuating itself, and that's so important. It's the most important thing, and because of that, it's at the heart of our existence. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here because we really have no meaning. It's just this urge to exist and life and life and life. You know, it's so strong that if you find a puddle of water on Mars, fish will be jumping out any second. Like, we just know life, you know, right? Well, no, we don't know that. These are all not true. So Freud was never disproven, and the ideas that he put into the culture were never disproven. They were never called on the carpet. When Margaret Mead, some of you know the anthropologist Margaret Mead, incredibly influential. She basically went to Samoa, okay? You know, she's involved in lesbian relationships, and she's part of that cultural super elite in the 20s and the 30s. She goes to Samoa, and she thinks that she has done a vast anthropological report on the sex lives of the Samoans, that they believe in free love, and that we should lose our own inhibitions. Because, look, here's a whole society, and they're all so happy, and they don't have these, you know, backward Judeo-Christian mores about sex. And the book comes out, and it's popular, and she's a star for decades and decades. Except now we know that most of her research was completely false. But the point is, it got into the culture, told the culture what it wanted to believe. Free love, right? That's basically where Freud is coming from. Then Kinsey comes out. Kinsey, most of us aren't old enough to remember, but in the 50s, Kinsey was it. His stuff came out with this pseudoscientific bent, and he had done all this research. He was a serial child abuser, sexual abuser, okay? There is still a Kinsey Institute at what university, I forget. All of these bad ideas, not only harmful, but actually false, have been pumped into the culture, but never retracted. When Kinsey was proven wrong, Judith Reisman, I've had her on my radio show many times, people have written books proving these things wrong, but nobody cares about those books. Nobody knows about those books. The media doesn't say, oh my goodness, we need to do something about this, right? So the media is fickle and sloppy. They let somebody like Harvey Weinstein carry on for decades, and then suddenly somebody decides, oh yeah, that's wrong, and we better do something about it. And suddenly Kevin Spacey, who's been carrying on for decades and decades, it's like, oh, you can't do that anymore. We've decided. Somebody decided. You can't do that anymore. And what, that's the messy culture in which we live. That's how information flows. And the largest idea, of course, is who we are as human beings. Where do we come from? Is there anything beyond this universe? Is there a God beyond this universe who intended that we exist and created us and designed us and wants to communicate with us? Those are the ideas everyone has. But the culture does, I was going to say, a poor job. That's really being kind. They work actively against not just what I believe, but what I now know to be true about all of these huge questions. And when they have evidence to the contrary, they don't say, oh, I'm going to be the one to put this out there, because there's this powerful cultural narrative that will not stop moving in this direction. They don't want to be the ones to raise their hands against this kind of thing. So, as you know, all these ideas are tied in together. If I believe that the universe just came into being randomly, and that we evolved out of primordial soup randomly, then I know that life literally has no meaning, that the very concept of meaning is a human construct with no basis, that the search for meaning is just kind of like junk DNA, right? It's just kind of there, but it doesn't really lead us anywhere. There's no meaning, and if there's no meaning, there is genuinely no such thing as good or evil. That's just in your head. It's just something you do while you're here before you go back to the dust and to nowhere that, you know, you kind of use to get by. That's kind of the narrative. Now, as I said earlier, only in some places will people be putting that out there explicitly. Mostly it's an assumption, right? So when I went to college, went to Yale University, that's an assumption that's there. Very few people are willing to go there. Very few people are brave enough to say, here's what I believe. I don't believe in God. Therefore, I believe that we're here through random processes. And those random processes are so genuinely random, truly random, that life has no meaning whatsoever. So if I butcher millions of people, that is not evil. It could be evil in some people's minds, but I know objectively there's no such thing as evil. There's no meaning. The love that I have for my kids or my spouse or my parents or whatever, that's just chemicals. There's no such thing as the kind of love, that transcendent love. It doesn't exist. Very few people are daring enough to say that. Why? Because most people in their guts would kind of know that can't be true. Now, because most people would respond with, I'm not buying that, people don't go there. They don't say that. But it is implicit. And the implicitness of it suggests that you can have casual sex, you can do whatever you want, you can live freely, quote unquote, right? So that is all through the culture, but it comes from that larger worldview, which is supported by Darwin and Freud and on and on and on. And people kind of feel like, you know, it has some kind of scientific reasoning behind it, but of course it does not. And whenever we find out it doesn't, nobody taps you on the shoulder and says, oh, by the way, that's not true, that's not true. Margaret Mead was discredited, and Kinsey was discredited, and Freud was discredited. And even the people who worship Darwin aren't buying a tenth of what he was putting out. But, you know, you're not going to be in those conferences where the evolutionists are debating the finer problems of Darwin. They've just kind of moved on, but they're not letting you know that they've moved on. The textbooks are 30 years behind. So we have to acknowledge that it's not only about what is true and what is not true. Even though something is true, the question is, do people know that it's true? Your average person in America obviously does not. When you see Neil deGrasse Tyson or anybody else like that putting this stuff out there, there is no rebuttal. The big networks, whether CNN or whatever, they're not saying, and you know, there's another side of the story. Oh, by the way, it's the true side of the story, and we'd like you to hear that. Now, so you understand we're living in bizarre times, okay? It would be like living in the Soviet Union in the 60s and knowing that the whole thing is nonsense, but who is going to be able to talk about that? We kind of live in a culture like that. You can talk amongst your friends, but the wider culture is not interested. So when I became a Christian in the 80s, I started reading some of the things that I've been alluding to just now, books by scientists like Hugh Ross. I remember I read Hugh Ross's books in the early 90s, and I was astounded. I said, I have never seen a hint of this information about the fine-tuning of the universe. I have never seen a hint about how faith and science are more than compatible. I've never seen a hint of that. How could I live in a culture that's so dysfunctional that there's all kinds of false stuff being put out there and whatever, and you start feeling like a crazy person? And I started getting interested in some of these things. And then, of course, as a Christian, I'm interested in anything that's true, right? All of us, we should care about the truth. It's not our truth. If it's your truth, it's a lie. We should care about the truth. And sometimes the truth will be uncomfortable to Christians. But we have a deeper faith that God, who is truth, says, whatever is true, I want you to go with that, even if it makes you uncomfortable, right? So even if there's some scientific discovery that makes me squirm a little bit, God is the God of reality. Otherwise, there's no God, okay? So if he's the God of reality, whatever is true, I just want to follow what is true. So as a Christian, that was my position. I thought I start reading stuff about science and reading this and that, and I start discovering that there's a whole different historical narrative. There's all kinds of stuff out there that I have never been exposed to ever, because the mainstream media, they're interested in selling papers, they're interested in sleeping with their girlfriends, they're interested in whatever they're interested in. They're not interested in helping you. They're just doing what they do. Now, this is not true of everybody in the mainstream, but I'm saying it's the general culture in which we live. So one of the things that I discovered is that God is real and that he's active today, not just in fine-tuning creation as it moves along. I was aware that God is active today even before I heard the term Cambrian explosion, right? And I thought that might get a laugh. This is a, so the fact is that when I realized that, I realized that there's such thing as miracles. God does miracles. And I have actually experienced a few genuine miracles. I don't mean like a blessing. I mean like a miracle where you go, wow, that is insane. That is insane. God is real. That just happened. Now, not everybody's experienced them. I've experienced just a few. So one day I'm talking to a publisher, pretty secular. And as a way of kind of witnessing to him about my faith, I tell him one or two of these miracle stories. He then says to me, you got to write a book about miracles. And I thought, well, I don't want to write a book about miracles. But he was so excited hearing this. He's like, you're the guy. You got to write a book about miracles. So at some point, literally after a year, he kind of convinced me maybe I should do this. Because, again, in the culture, you get books usually by Christians about miracles that are a little too religious, and they kind of take miracles for granted to the point that they shouldn't. Or you get a kind of a secular worldview that says the whole idea of miracles is idiotic, right? So I thought I'd like to kind of write something in between that has a proper wonder of the concept of miracles. So in the course of writing this book, it dawned on me that, you know what? The biggest miracle of all is this crazy thing called the fine-tuned universe, which most people that I know have never heard of. They've never read Hugh Ross. They've never read John Lennox. They've never read, there's some people here who've written books on that subject. They never heard of that. And most people that I know in churches, serious Christians, have never heard of any of this stuff. And I thought, okay, as a popularist, as somebody who can understand this stuff, I've read this stuff, I want to put it out there. So I'm going to write a couple of chapters in the miracle book about the fine-tuned universe, that the biggest miracle of all is the creation out of zip of the entire universe as we know it and all the details around that. That is, when you look into it, if you can really begin to appreciate it, it will freak you out. It is scary. It's really scary because you start appreciating that every breath you take is, I mean, it really can make you a little self-conscious. So I thought, let me put that in the book. So I put it in the book, and then there's other miracles and so on and so forth. And then when the book comes out, my book, Miracles, the publisher says, well, I hope you can write an op-ed or something like that. Maybe we can sell to a paper, and they'll help sell books or get some attention to the book. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to write an op-ed on my book Miracles, I got to write on this fine-tuned universe stuff. This is the miracle. It's the miracle that makes the parting of the Red Sea look like something done by a child. And so I wrote a piece with the title, Is Science Leading Us to God? Now, I want to say that my Miracles book, some of you heard about Socrates in the City last night. I just want to interrupt myself to let you know that you can get the hardcover of the book for $5 from the Socrates in the City website. If you just go to Socrates in the City, you can get the hardcover for it's just a beautiful book, and I want to let you know that. But you can imagine we're not making money on that, right? We want to get the book out there. But I decide to write this piece. So I write an op-ed, Is Science Leading Us to God? And I think, who's going to publish something like this? Maybe, you know, foxnews.com might publish it. I really don't know. But I wrote it. And I thought, well, the first place, of course, you got to start at the top just in case they might take it. Yeah, you know that they won't, but it would be wrong not to send it. So I sent it to the Wall Street Journal. Now, the weird thing is, it just so happened, and, you know, this is maybe not in the realm of miracle, but it struck me as at least fascinating that I just bumped into somebody at a Socrates in the City event who is one of the editors at the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal. I'd never had a connection at the Wall Street Journal, whatever. And so I sent this to that person, and they published it. They changed the title to Science Increasingly Makes the Case for God. So a little too on the nose for me. I wanted it to be a little bit more like, see what you think. But they published it. They published it in the online version. I guess it was Christmas Eve, I think, or Christmas Day. I don't remember. And then it was in the paper the next day. Well, my daughter and wife and I were driving up to Vermont to go skiing because we don't have Utah or Colorado on the East Coast. And as we're going up, the Wall Street Journal online still would tell you like how many Facebook shares or whatever. Like you could see the number on the article. And it was funny because Tim Keller, who was the pastor of Redeemer Presbyterian in New York City, kind of a big deal. Some of you have read his books. He'd been profiled or written something in the Wall Street Journal, and he had his article had reached 15,000 Facebook shares. And I thought, wow, I wonder how many this article is going to get. I'm just, you know, you always want to know. You want some metric, something to see. Is anybody reading this, you know? So as we're driving up, I'm obviously driving, can't look at my phone, but my daughter every now and again tells me like, well, it's up to 7,000 Facebook shares. I'm like, uh-oh, Tim Keller's in trouble. I'm breathing down his neck. He thinks he's such a big shot. I might be able to topple him. Let's see what happens. Well, by the time I hit the Massachusetts border on I-91, I believe we were tied with Tim Keller. Now, something inside me want to call him up and say, ha ha, but I've lost his number and I know he might not appreciate the joke because he has no sense of humor. And he doesn't like people. I shouldn't say that publicly. That's not true. But I thought, this is weird. Like 15,000 Facebook shares on an 850-word piece that tells you about the fine-tuning of the universe. Now, keep in mind, I am not a scientist. I read books by scientists, and I knew that most people, including most Christians, had never heard of these scientists, which is a scandal itself. If we lived in a normal culture, all of those scientists would be as popular as Neil deGrasse Tyson or Bill Nye the Science Guy. I mean, we just live in an insane world where that point of view is put out constantly, and you never even hear the other side, which happens to be true. Not only does the other side happen to be true, but it has such a sick level of evidence that it's not like, nah, it looks true. It's a slam dunk. It's like, was Abraham Lincoln a historical figure? What's your point of view? Well, there's always going to be somebody who says we didn't land on the moon in July of 1969, but those people are properly known as, you know, lunar landing deniers, right? I just made that up. But the point is, there are some things that are so clear through the evidence that to take the opposite point of view is a joke. So you can say, I'm not sure if Jesus existed historically, right? Now, that is pretty ridiculous based on the evidence we have today, but there's still people who kind of believe that. But the evidence for Abraham Lincoln was like, you know, you wouldn't even have a conversation with that person. The evidence for what I write about in my little article is so overwhelming that it's just insane. It's bizarre. It ought not to be possible that there's that much evidence for the fine-tuned universe and for the God who created it ought not to be possible that that is so overwhelmingly true. But the reason that is true, so you're tracking, is that as science has progressed. Now, again, this is the counter-narrative. This is crazy. We've always been hearing this idea that the more science we know, the less there's a need for God, right? Now that we know where thunder comes from, we don't believe that God is up there throwing lightning bolts. Well, you know, Christians never believed that anyway. We didn't believe in Zeus. But the point is that a lot of people who don't understand the Bible think that that's where God comes from, right? So the narrative is, the more science we know, the less there's a need for God. That's obvious. Now, that's the old narrative, and nobody updates it. So I'm here to update it and to say that in the last 50-something years, the tide has turned so dramatically that it's a joke. The evidence for the fine-tuning of the universe and for a creator and all of that stuff, as Stephen Meyer has in his new book that's coming out, is not only overwhelming, but every single day it becomes more overwhelming. In other words, let's say in 1960, Carl Sagan says, we know that there are two necessary criteria for life to exist on a planet. It needs to be this far away from a sun, and there's something else, whatever, and that's about it. And based on that and the number of planets that we think are in the universe, there's probably billions and billions of planets with life on them, right? That's the math. But then you find out that there's a third criterion for life that we just discovered scientifically, and then a fourth, and then a fifth, and then a sixth. And the more science discovers about the nature of matter, the nature of the universe, the more science understands every year that passed that there are more things necessary for life to exist. So at some point, you get 30 factors that rational scientists would agree are utterly necessary for life to exist on a planet. And at some point, because the number of planets is finite, and because you have to multiply, right, you're not adding up, you're multiplying that every time you add another criterion, it's like it increases the factor of the ability to say that how many planets might have life. And you start saying, well, it's not looking so good anymore. Now it looks like maybe there's 5,000 planets that have life. But if you are hoping that the universe arose from nothing, out of nothing, and that there's no God, you're still saying, well, 5,000, that's a lot. But the problem is, the more science discovered, the more criteria were found to be necessary. And it got to be so many of those as the years passed. Now, the news is not tracking on this. Time Magazine's not doing an article on this. But as the years pass, people like Hugh Ross and John Lennox and others start saying, folks, there ought not to be one planet in the universe that supports life. Think about what I just said. In other words, suddenly the existence of life is conceivably mathematically possible, but it doesn't really make sense that there is a planet that supports life, because there is so much necessary. It's like having, you know, 200 dials on the wall behind me, and if any one of them is a millimeter off, the universe doesn't exist. Not life doesn't exist, the universe doesn't exist, right? Okay, well, imagine that we add another 10 dials to the 200. And then we add another 10 dials. Every year that passes, science is discovering more and more and more about the nature of the universe, and it's working against the hypothesis that life arose randomly. So you eventually reach a point where not only are the odds that maybe there's one planet, mathematically speaking, but it goes in the opposite direction. The odds start working against there being any planet. And then the odds against there being any planet increase and increase and increase and increase and increase. So you get to the point where you say the odds are septillion to one that there should be a single planet based on everything we know necessary that might support life. And so it's like what Stephen said yesterday. Jim Carrey says, oh, you mean then there's a chance? Yeah, septillion to one. Then there is a chance, and I still can sleep with my girlfriend. Hallelujah. Right? Well, that's the story. The Wall Street Journal, you know, I don't know how I got around the firewall, but the article got published, and it promptly went insane. By the time we were settled into our hotel in Vermont, it was not just passing Tim Keller's 15,000 Facebook shares, it was at 100,000 Facebook shares. And you can imagine, yes, who knew that anything good could come out of Facebook, which is evil and fascist, but we'll talk about that another time. So, no joke, folks, it went over the course of the next couple of weeks, quote unquote, viral. It went to well over 300,000 Facebook shares. And somebody who's an editor at the Journal emailed me and said, by the way, I know off the record that if it is at that level, it is literally the most popular article in the history of the Wall Street Journal. Yeah. And it kept going. And it's now at something like 650,000 Facebook shares. It is more than double of any article that they have ever had shared. So the question is, why is it so popular? And most of us know, it's my writing. Obviously, I wrote it, and it's just that good. But there are other factors. And here's the other factor. And this is at the heart of what we're talking about. There is a hunger in the world for this kind of information. Most people who don't self-identify as scientistic, materialistic atheists, because when you're hanging out in the scientific universe, like, those people exist. But in the real world, there are very few people who have that worldview. There are a lot of people that haven't thought through what they actually believe, and they're kind of grooving on the rubble of the confused culture. And even those people are open to truth and kind of feel like it doesn't make sense that science and faith are at odds, or that there's no meaning to my life. So they're hungry for this. Where are they going to find any evidence for the idea that this is true? Well, you and I know nowhere. In fact, they're getting tons of evidence to the contrary from Neil deGrasse Tyson and the, you know, pop scientists du jour. And that's that. So when they saw this article, people went nuts. And what do? They share it. Holy cow. Read this. Science is not only not incompatible with faith, but it seems like science is pointing us to the God of the Bible. That's nuts. Have you read this? The hunger in this country, where there's a media blackout on information like this, thanks to the internet, it just went that crazy. And it went so crazy that people of whom I'd never heard before, like Lawrence Krauss, decided somebody needs to take a stand against this nonsense. So people started writing rebuttals. And he wrote a long piece in The New Yorker. And even though I'm not a scientist, I'm smart enough to be able to read that piece and understand he did not have a single valid point to refute what I said. That didn't stop them from publishing it, you'll notice. You need to know that. But the point of this is that there is such a hunger for truth. Even among the people who would tell you, I don't care about the truth, I just want to live my life, you can't suppress it because every atom in your body is signed by Yahweh, by Jesus, the Lord of hosts. You can't escape it. And so you might hate it. It's like being tattooed with the name Jesus all over you and you're an atheist and it's like, that's gonna be a tough life. What are you gonna do? You gonna scratch it all off? What are you gonna do? Tough. The Creator signed his work and you're it. So the hunger for this kind of stuff is huge. And what it boils down to, folks, is that you, those of you in this room, and those of you who are going to watch this online or whatever, it is up to you to spread this information. CNN is not at a point where they're willing to spread this information. Fox News doesn't seem to have the time to cover anything beyond the Mueller investigation. I'm grateful that they're covering it, but you understand that the media, they've never heard of the fine-tuned universe. They've never heard of it. It is up to you through social media, through your contacts, to spread the information. And I don't mean only among your nerd scientist friends. Now, we know that at that level, it's very important. But remember, there are plenty of people that are not scientists. They're still interested in this stuff on a pop level. It is up to us to spread this news, to spread this information. It's why I do things like Socrates in the City, like we did last night, because this stuff is so exciting, but holy cow, even before we knew that Charlie Rose was a groper, he wouldn't have been on the Charlie Rose show, right? Those shows aren't interested in this kind of stuff. John Lennox was interviewed by Charlie Rose. They never aired it. I'm here to tell you that it's up to us, through social media, to promote these things because there is an insane hunger for this. You already know that because the piece that I wrote, I guarantee you it wasn't because of my writing. It was because people are interested in the truth. Is this true? If it's true, wow. It also has to do with attitude. I want to have time for a few questions here, but remember what I'm saying. We know this is true. Do not take a defensive posture. I'm sorry to bring it up, but it looks like there might be a God. Your posture ought to be one of confidence and to some extent of ridiculing the other side because it is that bad. Their case is so weak that they have to invent ideas like, there's zillions of universes, and that accounts for us here. That is so dumb. If you don't horse laugh them out of the room for that, shame on you. Only people like Stephen Meyer are qualified and must actually pretend to have a conversation with those people. Most of us should fall on the floor laughing because it is so stupid and so unworthy of anyone to believe in that. You need to understand that What I'm talking about is true. It's not it might be true. It's not we believe it's true. It is true. And people who are so backward and so behind the times that they haven't done the research to understand where we are scientifically and in all these other areas. I could talk about biblical archaeology. It's the same concept, right? Every year that passes, we discover more and more and more and more evidence for the Bible. Look, these are facts. If people aren't comfortable with the facts, that's their issue. But we're talking about facts. We're not talking about point of view or worldview. We're talking about science. We need to be in your face about that. And I don't mean be a jerk, but you need to understand, like, this is on the level of somebody saying, I don't believe Abraham Lincoln existed as a historical figure. He's a myth made up in the kids' books that I read. It's more ridiculous than that. I want you to know this is true. If you don't believe it, you can read some of the books we're talking about. My miracles book is the pop level version of this, right? I have two chapters on this stuff, and everything that is in there, I ripped off from John Lennox and Hugh Ross, okay? This is not, you don't need to do the math and the science to write about it. I want everyone to know about this, and I want to point them back to John Lennox and to Hugh Ross and to all the scientists that are here. God bless you. Thank you very much. Thank you.